share their strength and hope with each other that they may solve a common problem and help others to recover from alcohol. The only requirement for membership is the honest desire to stop drinking. He has no dues or fees, is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. Our primary purpose is to receive the bride. I imagine you all got every word I said.
You know, sounds like a that.
Well, the TV topic, huh? TV topic. Anyway. Any alcoholics in the house?
8,000
of them. Right here. Any newcomers here for the first, second, or third meeting, please raise your hand. Any visitors here from outside of the Los Angeles area would like to stand and identify themselves? Water, stand up.
What's going on? There's nothing here.
Start with Tom Page, who's been a steady member here for 1,000 years. Tom, would you stand up? And there are many others that I suppose I will miss, but Tom has been a steady member to this center since he got sober here 4 years ago. 1,000 years ago. We have some visitors. Yes, there's Dan Winslow in the house. Didn't come tonight, huh? There's a lad here that came up from Dallas that I came to about last week tonight. He's here tonight. He started 2,000 years ago. I'd like to have him stand up. Would you stand up, Johnny McLennan?
Way back here.
Okay. John started the group and has been sober ever since. My wife. They have Bill Wilson and started international. We have here in Los Angeles the man who started the first successful group. And that's the group that we are trying to off of, which is extinct now, the old mother. This man fought it out for a long time, practically alone. Today he started. And he didn't know anything about AA until he got here himself. He had a book, he read the book, and he started AA. And it saved his life. I want you to meet Mortimer Joseph, who will give us a good work, too.
Thank you, Al. Thank you. growth and development and success of AA and other companies. I myself had my last drink in December of 1939, which is a little over 35 years ago. During that 35 years, or those 35 years rather, I have my memory has faded. I don't remember everything that happened as clearly as I used to a few years ago. This is something that perhaps has had to do with the others in this room, or if it has, and it probably will. I made a note or two so that I would tend not overlook it too much, and I understand that my dear friend Cliff is going to speak after me, and perhaps he can correct any errors that I may make, and or any errors, omission, or commission, let's put it that way. AA, as we know it today, in Southern California, actually began on either the last Friday in March or the first Friday in April of 1940. It began a medley of the Cecil Hotel, which, as many of you may know, is virtually in the heart of Skid Row. It's at the corner, I remember correctly, of Wicks and Main. I think it can be so suggested that it's almost in the heart of Skid Row. There were really two reasons for our selection of the Cecil Hotel for our meeting. One was that the rent was pretty cheap. It was only $3 a night. And that was a very, very important aspect of the situation of that town. So the thing can all be as we traveled through the evening, what we were really headed for if we didn't think about our problems. At that first meeting, I would venture to say there were 12, possibly 13, possibly 14, possibly only 10. I don't really know. I don't remember. I didn't think at that time that the number of people there would ever be significant, just as I didn't realize at that time that the date of that meeting would ever be significant. None of these things seemed at that time of any importance significance to me, because I didn't even know whether we survived. And we all didn't. Because there was one time before we moved out of the Cecil Hotel meeting place when everybody who was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous at that time, allegedly a member of Alcoholics Anonymous at that time, was drunk, except myself. And they were all holed up in an apartment on the Willow Street. Somewhere near L.A. I don't know where it is. Anyway, it's off the lawn. I know that. And they were all pulled up there in this apartment. And you know how they all got there? In our ignorance, or at the time, I think it was ignorance. Maybe that's why it's pretty good. I'm really not. But in those days, when a member got drunk, the only thing that he knew to do was to take another member, a sober member, to to help him get sober. And that is what we did. And our membership at that time was, I said earlier, was very small. And pretty soon, we had everybody who had any plans of sobriety at all up there at that apartment on Monroe Street, all of them trying to throw each other up. All of them myself. I think that's one of the more humorous aspects of our very early days. Well, I don't want to take up this time, but it's kind of a joke. Looking out over this room tonight and thinking back over it, I realize that to the best of my knowledge and belief, and if I'm mistaken, I hope that the individual or individuals whom I may convince of this recollection will be given. The best of my recollection, there are many people alive today who were at some people who tell me that another is Cliff Walker. The third is the widow of a man named Frank Thatcher, who passed away a few years ago. Those are the only people that I can remember. Although Clint told me a moment or so ago that there's a chap by the name of Gort. He have eluded all of us, who was also there, but who shortly thereafter moved to Arizona and moved out of the In any event, ladies and gentlemen, we were fortunate. The management of the Cecil Hotel, when we went in to rent this mezzanine of theirs for the purpose of holding our meetings, and told them the purpose of these meetings, looked at us a little strangely, and I guess they wondered what was going to take place up there. Were we going to tear the place apart, reduce it to a shambles? What was going to happen when a bunch of stuff got up there on the mezzanine? But they took a chance. We should all be grateful to them today, I think, because we might have had a lot of trouble finding a place to hold our meeting had not been for the management of the Cecil Hotel.
I didn't think these things were significant. I didn't think these numbers meant anything at the time.
But we soon realized that the embassy was too large for it. And we went from there to the Elks Club at Fitz and Alfaro. Thank you. This is fun. We went to the Elks Club and held our meeting there for a while. And on the 1st of March, 1941, the now famous article by Jack Alexander appeared in the Saturday Evening Post. And from then on, it was really better. But I have omitted one aspect of our Cecil Hotel experience that I must relate to you, because I think it is so important to the growth of AA and to what happened in AA. It seems there was a man over in Tucson, Arizona, who had a drinking problem, who had come out there from Philadelphia. And having read in Time magazine that Alcoholics Anonymous was growing in the Pacific Coast area and in the Southwest area too, I believe. In any event, he read about AA in Time magazine. He wrote to them and he asked them if there was a group in the state of Arizona, and they answered him by saying, no, there isn't any AA group in Arizona, but there is a group in California, and so help is nearby if you want it. And inasmuch as they knew in New York that I was meeting these meetings in Los Angeles, they gave him my name. He wrote to me and asked me if I would help him, or if the group would help him, rather. If he came to Los Angeles, and I replied that the group and I would certainly do everything we could to help him. He came over here, and he telephoned to me from a sanitarium in Compton, where he was drunk. That man's name Frank Randall, of whom you all, I'm sure, have heard. I went out to the Compton Sanitarium to see Frank Randall, and the first time I went out there, I don't remember how long I was there, but I remember this, that he was drunk when I got there, and he was much drunker by the time I left, because he had a bottle of gin in the bed with him. And he was working on it while I was talking to him. And in those days, I didn't realize that the one that he was talking to when he was drunk, we didn't realize anything. It was all a trial and error process. In any event, I went out to see him several times. And finally, one night, he appeared on the mezzanine of the Cecil Hotel with an attendant from the sanitarium, and it appeared that they wouldn't let him out of the place without the attendant, so he came with the attendant. He brought the attendant to the meeting, and he appeared with the attendant and announced that he had come over on a trolley or a bus, or I don't know what, but anyway, he'd gotten over there anyway. And he sat quietly at those meetings. He attended every meeting for several weeks and sat very quietly at the meetings. Didn't even say a word. Finally, one night he came up to me and he said to me, "What the hell keeps you sober?" And I had to answer him quite frankly. I told him I didn't know. I thought that it was what I was doing. I thought it was AA that But I hadn't been sober long enough, really, to know. But in any event, it wasn't long thereafter before Frank came to me, and I say it wasn't long, it might have been a matter of several months. I don't remember any of the time involved in any of the events. I don't even remember the date anymore. As I said earlier, and I said before, I did not think they would be turned out to be anyway, he came and asked me if he was eventually going to do the health care.
And the only encounter I ever had with anyone was with the very considerate Arizona Highway Patrol, who took me to my hotel and gave my car keys to the desk clerk and said, don't give them back to him until he's sober. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I got here in California, and one night, down in Palm Springs, I ran out of liquor. And it was about 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was impossible to get a bottle down there at that time. At least it was, as far as I know. I didn't know where to go to get. And I had with me the AA book, for which I had sent while I was still living in Denver some months before that. It was published originally, I think, in Central and then 39. Well, I must have gotten it perhaps in June or July of 1939, and I used to sit down at home at night with the idea of reading it, and every time I read 3 or 4 pages, I took a break. So you can imagine how many pages I read before I was really looped. I never read the book at all, except a few pages now and then. But this night, in this hotel, in Palm Springs, I was literally beat to my knees. I had been drunk for a good 3 weeks. I had no liquor. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go to get the liquor. And all I had was a little book. And I read that book twice. That night, the remainder of that night, and early the next day, I've never had a drink. Now, perhaps some of you have had a similar experience. I don't know. But that is how I finally quit drinking. Through the book. And as you have heard from many other speakers, far more eloquent than I can ever be, the whole story is in this book. The whole story is in that book. There is nothing that anyone adds up to that book, and there is very little to that book. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for the warm reception you gave me, for the patience you have shown in listening to me. I'm delighted to be here. I wish you all the best of luck in the world and continued sobriety for the remainder of your life. Thank you.
I'm very delighted to be here tonight, particularly to see Orrin and Francis. Hello, I thought he came all the way from Denver to find me, but I didn't know it. Oh, great. In fact, I'm taping the story about going to Hollywood to New York now to the barrier. So, it's a little bit boggled, but what's the difference? Because in those days, we weren't competing, thinking of history at all. All we were concerned was survival. That was damn hard to even survive in those days. I'd like to pay a very special and warm welcome to those of you who are new and fairly new. I sincerely hope something in this meeting might attract you enough that you will keep coming back. We don't usually have these neutral admiration societies in a meeting. On these anniversaries, we do, get a little sticky at times, but the old timers, I guess, we've been building out there once in a while, too. Anyway, today, you know, we've always done everything back afterwards of other organizations. Do you know any other fraternity or organization or you can get into without
passing from membership rules. Our charge dues is the length of the law, and fees for services rendered. I don't know of any organization that is always clamoring for money. In AA, we support ourselves. We don't brag about ourselves for the general public. Everything we do seems to be different than other people. Even our anniversaries, birthdays, they're not so much a period of congratulations for something personal to achieve. Here you find the extreme of it with gratitude. For you new people, I'd like to tell you how great this society is. I hope that you never judge it by just a few meetings. I'll guarantee you, if you keep coming back, you'll look deeper. You'll see something quite wonderful. And if you take this program and practice it to the best of your ability, I also guarantee you that someday something will happen to you. Your whole life will change. You'll not only find that you can stay sober, but you'll also find that you'll a way of living that's indescribably wonderful. And certainly, hearing more, he's such a wonderful guy. I'm going to tell you more about him later. But Moore is probably the only guy in the world that can ever got me to an AA. Because I'd had a contact with a girl named Kay Miller, who started to appear in 1939. On alcohol. And when she called me and wanted me to help her start alcohol anonymous, I told her, well, I don't need it. I'm sober. I've been sober whole 2 whole weeks, so I didn't need it. And Mort came along. Anyway, starting 1934, 1935, June 10, when our second member of Alcoholics Anonymous got sober, they started a chain reaction of one drunk talking to another that has now spanned the world. I don't know how many groups, 30,000 now, upwards of a million of them. You find our program translated in almost every major language. Through these years, our public relations have been marvelous. News commentators and others continue to encourage our cause very sympathetically. How in the world would it, in almost 40 years, that they get the way it is? I think tonight, at this anniversary, I'd like to go back in history. About probably the most important point of our history. Bill says that our great growth came from one singular word, the word of communication. We have a healing communication amongst ourselves, worry about it, and God as we understand it. And in AA, we found out that all our communications are not the usual transmission of helpful ideas and attitudes. Our communications have always been unique and quite unusual. Why? Because of our kinship and suffering. And because this program, as great as it is effective only for us when we're constantly caring for others. Therefore, our channels of contact are always charged with the language of the heart, the language of love. And I think probably the most important singular
event of all our history is the point where our founders learned to communicate. 1934, Bill, the original member, got sober, the latter part. Study from a guy named Abby from the hospital that had called him. He had been a drunken, so Bill had known him. And Abby had gotten sober from the opposite movement. And he knew about Bill. He called on Bill. But a lot of this now is on in our own club step. But also, he said he was staying sober because he had come to believe in the greatest power. And Bill, of course, at that time was an agnostic, and he fought everything but the God stuff. So he went on drinking and finally hit his low bottom. At that point, he had one of these spiritual experiences. Well, I guess it's one of these psychic phenomena types of experiences. And in this, having this experience, he heard a voice saying that he was to start a chain reaction with drunk and eventually fan the world with his hand. But when he got out of the hospital, Bill took this quite seriously. Well, if I've got to save all the drunks in the world, I better get to it. So Bill put a stop to this. So the first thing Bill learned was how not to communicate with alcohol. Because he went out for the next 6 months, he called on 75 alcoholics. He took them into his home. He went into mansions and hovels. He went into hospitals. And at the end of 6 months, 75 calls later, he added up the score of recovery. And it equaled zero. He got nobody close. So he finally went to Lois. And he said, "Well, Lois, I'm a failure." God bless Lois. He said, "No, you're not there. You're still sober." Then he went to Silkworth, who was one of the greatest friends we've ever had, Dr. Silkworth, and who had at that time already treated over 20,000 drunks and had very little, if any, recovery. And he told Silkworth what he had been doing. And Silkworth says, "Well, Bill, I think you've got the cart before the horse. You're going out to these drunks and you're preaching at them. You're telling them about their sins, omission, and commission. You tell them about that odd experience you had." He said, "Bill, if I know drunks, they won't buy that unless you make them see they have to." Bill, he said, "You're in a wonderful position. You know, when I tell a drunk how sick he is, I tell him about the obsession that guarantees he will always drink and the physical thing that will guarantee he goes mad if he does drink. They say, "But Doc, you don't understand. You've never had this problem." But Bill, you've had the problem. Why don't you go out and tell your story? Tell them how you got so sick from drinking. Use these medical terms if you want. Pour it into them. Soften them up. I think if you can show them how sick they are, then they'll buy everything you got. Very shortly after that, Bill found himself in Akron on a business deal with Fail. And Bill was so disappointed for the first time in 6 months he had an urge to drink. And he knew he had to talk to another alcoholic. So he made 17 phone calls, and finally he got a hold of Dr. Bond, a medical doctor. And when he met Bob, he followed Silkworth's instructions to the letter. And two things happened that day that is very important to us. Bill got Bob sober, and Bob kept Bill. Bob didn't need spiritual instruction. He needed deflation and death, and the understanding that only one alcoholic can give another. Bill got the humility of self-forgetfulness and the kinship of one of his own kind. That day it was the greatest insight that Bob and Bill ever had, that all true communications are built on mutual need. That we could never talk down to other alcoholics. That the sponsor must always tell his needs as well as his prospects. This is the basis of our 12-step program. I hope we never, never forget. And I hope we pass this message on to every generation of drunkards that come along. That has been the communication that we have. Is unusual and deep. In fact, it was this kind of the language of the heart or the language of the love that got me to my first meeting. And more thought on me. Now, this gal, Kay Miller, had called on me, but she was a non-alcoholic and she couldn't communicate with me. But this morning, when I'm sitting in my room, my house, coming off a terrible drunk. And the doorbell rang. And here comes more. It's a God-given thing that I even opened the door. When I was in that condition, and the doorbell rang, I used to run out the back door. But for some reason I answered it, and he said, "My name is Morton Gillian. I'm an alcoholic." And then he told me this incredible story about reading the book in the Palm Springs Hotel. And he said, "Sir," he says, "I haven't had a drink for several months." And finally he said, "Sir," to me, he said, "Sir, Kay has been meeting in a park, in a different home." Oh, also, I might tell you that Mort left his job. When he got here to find Kay Miller and went up to see her at her apartment, she was packing for to go to Honolulu. And so Mort asked Kay, "Where are the meetings being held?" And Kay says, "Well, we're not meeting anymore. Everybody's drunk." Mort says, "Well, Kay, don't you have any letters, or inquiries where I can call on these people? I really need this work." So, also, he had told me after reading the book, he knew that if he wanted to keep this thing, he had to give it away. That's why he was so charged up. And it just happened when he left Kay's apartment. I lived right across the street from Beverly Hills, so Mort lived in Beverly Hills at that time. Mort, when I was drunk, I always lived in Beverly Hills. of course, when I was a doctor or an aviator, anyway. Anyway. Mort finally said, "He wants to start this meeting here. The cave will have a meeting in different places. I want to have a meeting at the same place, same night, same hour." Because he says, then we can be accepted. Alcoholics would need it. He says, "If I find such a place, we can find it." I said, "Yes." I had all the desire in the world. But I had to see Mort again. Here's Mort, clean, beautiful manners, gone through some of the great schools of back east. I always called him Mort a gentleman's gentleman. He had such beautiful manners. Why would such a guy like that call on such a jury? He had so beautiful filthy inside and outside. Why would he do it? The reason I went to my first meeting was to see Mort again. We have a tradition. And so we grow by attraction rather than connection. It seems to me, always, the attraction starts with the individual that makes the call. Ever since that time, ever since that time, I always, when I have a truck that's called a maid, clean up, I shave, but I want to be attracted to this person I'm calling. Maybe it's the only reason they will go to the meeting and see me again. I have to see more. I think the other attraction is the meeting place, a friendly group. I'll never forget when we went to, when we got to the 2207th Street, the other group. We had a guy, we had the meeting was up a long bunch of stairs. We had a guy named Woody. He had a smile as large as a corn pocket. Woody would stand up at the top of those stairs, everybody come in, get a smile at them, introduce them, make them feel comfortable. Once in a while, if it was a newcomer, he'd induce them around and see that they were taken care of. Sometimes guys would start up at the meeting, but what he said was a precedent, a tradition in this area, a meeting of the club, and everything. What he is saying, he says, I don't know anything about it. Hey, what I know is that my own opinion, if you want the real message, then it's important. Well, I thought something else. And this I didn't realize until many years later. It was the fact of his reputation. I know after a year, I think in 1941, I got a job and had to put on mine. I couldn't go to meetings, so it scared the hell out of me. So I found out that driving to and from my work, I could say the preamble, the club step, and the paragraph after. I advertised prayer as the greatest form of emphasis in the world, repetition. Later, Bill came out and said one of his writing things. Talks about the healing process of yesterday. And I said, well, to say more, I could remember after I went to a few meetings, and he kept reading the steps. I said, why do you read these damn steps every time? He said, why not? I said, well, I repetition. And besides, they're not pertinent to my problem. Well, he said, what is your problem? I said, my only problem is I drink too much. What he tells me when I'm sober, I'm a good husband, I'm a good father, it's only when I get drunk she calls me a revolving bastard. I asked Dorothy when I got sober, why she called me a revolving one. She said, well, any angle, I looked at your brother, you're still a bastard. I can hear you plenty of reasons why she had good problems. Anyway, Bourbon was said. So, but I do not help. I want to tell you, you've got to be careful who you take advice from in AA. That's the age we give it by the bush before and take it by the thimble. But after the meeting, a guy comes up to me, and he hasn't been there as long as I have. He says, you don't have to take all this damn stuff. Just take time. What do you like? And I said, so. Oh, I figured, well, I don't want to take two and build up a fraternity. It worked for a while, but then I got taken drunk. Anyway, about time, I thought, 1940 was a hell of a 4 year period. But looking back at it, and just, I thought it was a very good year because you found the process of trial and error. We got organized. You know that we incorporated AA for the state of California. And we were going to get out charters. How come you guys started to come further to get charters? Nobody paid attention to it. One time we had Robert Bruce of Progress. Remember that? That didn't last very long because he could only speak 3 minutes. And this group stuff we had. One of the most amusing stuff. At that time it was so much. We got a call from a woman and a couple of guys out here in West Los Angeles somewhere. Just one guy. I guess the wife called him, said her husband was drunk. Called up a couple of guys and sent them home. So we went out here in West Los Angeles, found the house, rang the bell, and nobody answered. Walked around the house, looked in the bedroom window, and there's the guy back down. So they jimmied the back door, picked the guy up, took him to their apartment, sobered him up, found out they had the wrong guy. This is the truth. This guy come there to paint the house.
Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing more.
Oh, Mr. Scott.
what time you're going to start. Are you still in there?
That's all AA is,
love, and service. This reminds us that alcoholic synonymous is more than a set of principles. Alcoholic synonymous, in fact, is a worldwide society of men and women alcoholics in action. We must carry the message, because if we don't, millions of alcoholics are going to die because we didn't care enough to give them the same chance that you and I have.